1 million hinges in one 3-month period. And I'll tell you one thing, I haven't eaten a hinge since.
You haven't eaten a hinge since.
I was once lowered in...
Oh, no, I don't believe this.
Oh, my God.
I don't believe it.
Bono is completely naked. Go on, yes, Ed.
The worst job you ever
had.
Working
conditions were too bad.
I worked in a petrol station. And
fuel injection technician, Arbano.
I was a petrol pump attendant, and proud of it. And I wrote a lot of songs whilst waiting for the traffic to come my way. Of course, then they had the oil crisis, and
out of a job.
People queuing up, actually. You know, they were queuing up,
killing each other,
which was no good if you were trying to write songs and be a petrol pump attendant. And so I gave that one up, and I became a stores man. In PR rallies out there in the Howth Road. Wasn't very good at that. Wasn't very good at that at all. And I then joined U2, you know?
Medical advice.
And what was it Eric Stone used to say there?
Well, Eric Stone was, in fact, Eric, if you're listening, fair play to you. Eric was
Dave Edge and Larry, their first
called the Drifting Cowboys, which was a country band, and I bought my first guitar and amplifier from Eric. And Eric used to bring myself and Lawrence out to the odd gig when the rest of the band were on holidays, and we used to do a few session gigs for Eric.
14, 15, godless.
Eric used to give me a lot of advice on the way to Ratos or wherever we were going, and I remember one jam, which was, he used to say, "Now, I'll tell you this, there's no money in the rock. There's no money. Get yourself together with a group of lads. If you do country songs, you'll be working 7 nights a week on the gigs we have to turn down."
And what do you say about the Foxtrot?
And he was right.
What about the Foxtrot?
Oh, that was true. He said, "Now, a few Foxtrots. Now, I'll just give you this example. We were down in the Ring of Kerry playing down there. We couldn't get anyone up. And we were getting desperate after.
We tried the rock and roll.
We tried everything. We tried the waltz, we tried the rock and roll, the jive. We hit a Foxtrot, and within 2 minutes, the whole place was black with people gone."
There you go.
Well, we've been there. Absolutely right. The man was right. We've been trying to get a Foxtrot together for years.
It's interesting. Malcolm McLaren's next record, which he's doing with Jeff Beck, is based around the Foxtrot and the waltz. That's just a little...
Aside.
The Joshua
Trot. Okay. The Joshua Trot. All right. Okay, I think we'll take a break and earn some money, and then we'll probably take somebody else on the phone. Oh, it's finished, is it? Okay. Before I take somebody on the phone, I just want to remind people to make sure they watch at 6:30 tomorrow on RT1. Visualize the first of a 10-part series. We have 3 specials. It's tomorrow, U2, and next week it's at 7:00 on the Friday with Paul Cleary, and the following week, David Bowie, an interview that I did yesterday in London with him. And then we have 7 programs from the studio. Just thought I'd just throw that one in there.
Don't miss any of the Dave Fanning billboards around
town. Oh, God. Goes great with a quiet spin. All right. Is there somebody on the phone? Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, Cosmos, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Is your name Cosmos?
Yeah, Cosmos.
Wow, that's a weird name.
C-O-S-M-A-S.
Oh, go A-S. Oh, it's C-O-S-M-O-S. Yeah, right.
Yeah, a lot of people make that mistake.
Cosmos O'Donnell, you're in a tie.
Yeah.
In County Kildare.
Yeah, that's right.
So, fire away.
Yeah, is Bono back yet?
Oh, yeah, they're all here.
They're all there, yeah. I was just there wondering, is there any particular reason they're having the concert on this weekend? Like, because it's a good choice, really, because a lot of people are after finishing their leaving cert. And most of them, I think, are going to it. I'd say that's who's going to fill up the Croke Park, you know? It's going to be...
The weather wasn't that great. That's why we didn't decide to have it this weekend.
Was that a joke?
Good man, Cosmos. I tell you, the Edge told you know everything about the Cosmos. I don't know why. We played this... This was the same weekend we played 2 years ago, wasn't it?
No, it was last weekend.
I think it was just a question of fitting in between football matches, basically. There was no particular rhyme or reason for doing it, you know. But it is great that it is going to... it is on when the leaving is finished.
Are you doing your leaving, Cosmos?
Yeah, I'm just after finishing.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah.
How did it go for you?
Pardon?
How did it go for you?
It was fairly hard, you know. It was okay. I suppose you just have to wait and see.
What sort of subjects did you do?
I was doing business org, accountancy, art, and the other math, English and Irish. That was it, really.
What was the maths paper like?
Maths, the first paper was very hard. The second paper, well, I recognised the questions. I'd seen them before. Seen ones like them before. That was all, really.
How did the old trigonometry go?
The trigonometry.
Gone. Is that gone?
I thought that was the Greek paper.
Okay, Cousins, thanks very much for ringing in.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck. Okay. Thanks. And we have somebody else on the other line. Yvonne Fay and somebody Flemings. Cleona, is it? No, we have a... No, they're gone, are they? Oh, gosh, they're gone.
That Cosmo sounds like a cool guy.
Mm.
I like him.
But anyway, look at the... Cool you, down there the question play. Was, is Bono ever going to return to Virginia and County Cavan again?
Am I a virgin? No.
Okay, fair enough, Bono.
Oh, I've been to Virginia, County Cavan. I was up visiting a good friend of mine. We were spending a little time behind bars, and we stopped in Virginia, which is the most beautiful little town. Went in
there.
One
of the tidy towns a few times.
Is that right? It was pretty untidy after we left it. Now, I'm most upset. I don't know. I'm sure we'd be passing through. One thing I miss is traveling through Ireland. In the early days of U2, when we used to, you know, ground in the van and play, you know, a lot of the small halls around town. I miss that. I feel like we've missed out a bit of Ireland because everyone talks about Dublin and Belfast and Cork. And we are most guilty of that. But out there, the smaller towns are just fascinating to me, and I love them. I love the West. I love the Southeast. I mean, it's just, I think we're a bit deprived of that. And I would like to play just a few, you know, just turn up and play a few pubs, if that was okay. But trying to convince people to do these things is unbelievable. I mean, you come up with an idea like, let's just turn up and play, and then, you know, there's always 100 reasons why you can't do it. People will get hurt. Will you announce it? We'll just tell the radio an hour before we arrive. What if too many people arrive? I mean, you just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, Bono, listen, tell us something about people that you've been reading, for instance, lately, like Walker Percy, Robert Hayden, Jim House. Who's Jim House?
Jim House, he's an Indian poet, actually, a North American Indian poet. I'm very interested in North American Indian poetry, and indeed some of the black poets in America. I grew up, you know, I went to school, I some good people in school, you know, teaching us and everything. A fellow called Brian Grimson was really a very imaginative guy. But I'm really rebelling against a lot of poetry. I find it really pretentious sort of crap, and it doesn't talk about things that are relevant to my life, you know, to quote Morrissey. And, I mean, I just find myself more attracted to the writers that write about real life. And a lot of the European writers are a little too highfalutin for me, and I find much closer to, you know, American writers, and particularly American Indian writers. I really get off on. Really like them.
Well, what about Flannery O'Connor? Bruce Springsteen said to you that you should read his book and Wise Blood.
Yeah, well, I think when we were doing the Leaving Certificate, I think we had Steinbeck was on our course, and I read all of his books, and I was really, really well into that. And I thought, you know, when I listened to Bruce Springsteen, I figured he'd obviously read Steinbeck, and of course he had, but he told me, actually, I've read Flannery O'Connor too. So it sounded like an Irish man, turned out to be an American woman. But there you go. And she was writing from a Catholic point of view about the Protestant-dominated southern states of America and the do-it-yourself religion. And I was very interested in that subject. And I read her, and there was a sort of black comedy. She's a funny writer, made me laugh. Like Joyce makes me laugh. And I think Irish writers are just looser. I find that a lot of the European writers and English writers are a little too uptight. So that's why I started listening to American Indian writers. I've got a great book called War Cry and a Prayer Feather. It's really a fantastic collection. Another one which is the Turtle. Not the Dream of the Blue Turtles. Something along that line.
It's a good name for an album.
Yeah.
It's deep. Yeah. I can feel a jazz phase coming on.
Yeah.
Next question.
That's my string. America. Do you see America differently now than you did, say, about 5 years ago? Like, when you go there a few times, you get, television and radio and hamburgers and all the rest. But you see it differently now, do you?
Yeah. We've been introduced to, you know, different sides of America. I saw a different side of America when I went to Central America, when I went south of the United States and into Salvador and into Nicaragua. And you see the results of a lot of American aggressive foreign policy. But I don't want to get into that now. I love America, by the way. I love the American people. And
the thing about the American people is that they're naive, in a sense, because of their media. Because American media is not like European media. You don't get world news appearing in American newspapers. You get local news. So people in America, all they get is the same bullshit day in, day out about local politics and what's going on, the murders, the rapes, it's all just that sort of stuff. But actually, if you, as we have done, go to America and start to get close to these people, you discover that they're not only naive, but they're really open. They're incredibly enthusiastic, much more enthusiastic and open than Europeans, with the possible exception of the Celtic Europeans, which I think are in the same sort of way as the Americans. And it's very refreshing, because you go there and you see that people are open to new ideas, and they don't sort of, they're not smug, they don't sit back on their kind of preconceptions and stop thinking about what's going on. If you hit them with a new idea, they're inclined to think about it instead of thinking that they know it all.
What do they think about us,
do you think? I mean, the Americans...
One of the big things I think that you two have done, forget the topping the charts and the mega stadiums, I think the smashing of the shillelagh, I think, has been one of the big things that they've done in America.
Mm.
And what kind of vibe do you pick up on that? What do they see us as now?
Well, a lot of the Irish people that we meet in America are actually old school friends or people we knew in the pub 3 years ago have actually gone there to work, and that's the big change. We've seen so many contemporaries of ours who are now having to go to America to find jobs. And a lot of these people are very bright, very together, and they do very well in America. Mm-hmm. So as well as the kind of third or fourth generation Americans who think Ireland is all about leprechauns and whatever, we meet a lot of people who've just left. So the Irish in America is, you know, it's not the cliche of the Irish going there in the sort of 19th century is not true anymore. It's people are still going there. And
there's two types of people going there. I mean, like, there's the brain drain and there's everybody else's friend who goes along just because they can't get a job here, right? So if you have directed a lot of your songwriting towards American foreign policy or whatever, what about the next time round? Is there any way that you might direct it towards what's happening in Ireland?
Well, I just... America is something still... you know, a little obsessed with. I would like to finish what I've started, and we've written some songs about Ireland. We've written songs about emigration. They're just not ready to bring out yet, and we're working on them. But America, hasn't just affected our lives. It affects everybody's lives. These missiles that are in Greenham Common and the missiles that they're planting in West Germany, and this affects our life. You know, we have this dream that we, just because we're an island, we're in the middle of the ocean between Europe and Russia and America. We're not. We're directly affected by what goes on in both those continents. And so we have a right to ask questions. And some of those questions, you know, don't have easy answers, but we have a right to ask them. In the first place, I must tell you a story about the Mothers of the Disappeared, which is the last track on the Joshua Tree. And so I wrote the song based on my experiences of the day I spent with the Madres, they're called. They were set up by Archbishop Romero. Archbishop Romero was a fairly right-wing guy, member of the Catholic Church, who was brought into Salvador to sort of, you know, quell the masses and stop them asking, you know, uncomfortable political questions. But when he saw the poverty and when he saw the injustice of the state of Salvador, he complained and gave out. And eventually, he was gunned down while giving mass in Salvador. They just walked in and they shot him down. But before he died, he set up the Madres, which is the Mothers of the Disappeared. And I spent a day with them. You'll see them in, if you go to see the Oliver Stone's film Salvador.
Yeah, it's in that, yeah.
You'll see all about them. Well, I just had a call about a few days ago, it was about last week or so, just to tell me that those very people, in fact, have been... they planted a bomb in the toilets of the building and they blew that building up. And there's nothing about it. In any of the papers. There's nothing about it in the West. And there is this conspiracy of silence. And, you know, that is the reality of American mm-hmm. foreign policy. That's separate from Americans. We're talking about one administration under Ronald Reagan. And I, that is something that you start to see. When you go to America first, you just, I'm taken up with it and excited by it and I love it and I love to be there. But you start, you dig further, scrape beneath the surface, and you...
Like, America is the best and the worst all rolled into one. When I think of America, I don't think of Ronald Reagan. I think of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, people like that. I mean, the idea behind that country originally was incredibly positive and very open, very liberal. What's happened to America is the tragedy. But, I mean, that can be reversed. That's, that's the thing about America. People are incredibly positive in their thinking, and there's no reason why things shouldn't change. Mm. The reason that things are the way they are is lack of information. People just don't know what's going on there.
There is something preposterous, I must say, about me standing, sitting here completely naked with, in fact, my knickers on my head, yeah, talking about Ronald Reagan's American foreign policy. I just like to say
that. That's the only way that you can talk about Ronald Reagan's foreign
policy. I just thought I'd interject that just to...
Well, you mentioned the conspiracy of silence. What about the conspiracy of hope, Joe, which is the only thing you did live-wise, say, between the Unforgettable, besides, of course, the gig in Cork for the Lark by the Lee for Radio 2, the conspiracy of hope tour. Now, you sort of adopted, if that's the right word, about six specific prisoners, and a lot of the pressure that you put on are because of your gigs or because of what you said, got about three of those released, and one or two of them actually wrote to you and said thanks.
We actually met the Russian political prisoner. And it was her second day in the United States, and she came to our concert. She'd never seen a rock and roll concert before. That was quite something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Meeting somebody who had been...
That made it all a bit more concrete, because, you know, Amnesty International, it seems like a lot of people with good intentions getting together writing notes. But when you actually see somebody who's been in prison for the last 10 years, it's actually free and can talk about it and... You know, a real human being, flesh and blood, that really puts it in a different context.
Yeah.
But Amnesty International is just the beginning, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, you have the address for Amnesty International on the album sleeve of the Joshua Tree. And when I was in Italy, and there were more banners for Amnesty International than there were for you too. So what do you want people to do? Do you want people to say, look, this is what we feel, and you do something about it, rather than listen to us all the time? Is that it?
Yep.
I mean, the basic message of you two is, look, this is what we think, but don't let us dictate to you. You know, we throw up a few ideas, we turn over a few stones, but, you know, make up your own mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there who probably think Amnesty International is all very fine, but what about what's happening in Dublin City, what's happening in Europe? And I would agree with them. You know, we're trying to do what we can do for Ireland, and I think those sort of things are good, but don't just sort of sit there and do nothing. Think about it and do whatever you can. That's the basic idea.
Okay, well, listen, we have somebody else on the phone. James Devitt in Cashel in Canterbury. James, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, speak up.
Hello.
Hello, James. Get your radio out of the way, first of all.
Is it in the way?
I have no idea. That's what Jerry Ryan says all the time when he does his singles review, so I just feel I'd better say it now.
Jerry's very professional.
No, all
very professional.
Have you got a question?
Yeah. How long is actual two performance? How long are they on stage?
It depends on Edge's boring lead guitar chords. It depends probably on my boring rants from the stage. And I think it will last about an hour and a half, an hour and 45. What'd you say, Edge?
I'd say about an hour and 45 is about average now. Sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less.
Will you have all your clothes on?
Definitely not. We'll be asking everyone in Crow Park to take the clothes off.
Well, rumour has it that Bono will be naked underneath all his clothes.
Do you know, you think this is bizarre, us asking you to come to Croke Park nude. I just heard Prince was asking people to dress in peach or black.
He just cancelled his concerts in London this week.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he cancelled them all because... But the funny thing is... he cancelled the concerts last Monday, and the reason was, and even though they didn't start till tomorrow, the reason was because of the weather. As if he would know what the weather was going to be like tomorrow.
You never heard the weather forecast. The long range.
The long range. Wait a minute, Jerry. I think we should just, we just get the news and then we hang on for a few minutes. I think.
Are we at the end of the
program? Wants to intrude.
We'll just come on about 10 or so.
Which are on the studio. Is that okay?
Oh, sure. Pat can do that. It's all right. No problem. Okay, listen. Thanks very much, James, for ringing in. Oh, he's gone.
Could somebody ring in with a joke?
Okay, yeah, then we got a joke. We have somebody else on the phone, Jane Sweeney from Rathmines. Jane, do you have a joke?
No, sorry, not on me at the moment.
Oh, good, you're getting into the spirit of it.
Yeah. I'd just like to ask the band, anybody in particular, what would you say to people who dislike both you, listening to you, and your music? Do you think that they're unfairly, unfairly subjected to listen to you on the radio, seeing you in the telly, you know, in the newspapers all the time?
Right, Larry.
I don't think there's any argument to anyone who dislikes us or dislikes our music. That's never been a question. If you don't like it, that's fine. What is the question as such? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if you don't like it, that's cool. I mean, what can we do about it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's all the time. It's kind of a YouTube diet.
Well, have you been listening to the program?
Yeah.
And what I stated earlier on, that an awful lot of it's got nothing to do with us at all.
Yeah, but, I mean, constantly in the whole... In everyone, I mean, everywhere you go, it's you too.
Yeah, I know, but that's got nothing to do with us. The press decide what they want to do themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, yeah. We would prefer that was not the case.
Yeah.
We're sick of reading it. We're sick of hearing it as well. And basically, you know, there's nothing we can do. We're trying to live here. We're trying to live in this country, you know what I mean? And the fact that it's on the radio, I know people are sick. Even I'm sick of it. We're all sick of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that people do end up saying, well, people end up saying, you know, so what? We don't want to hear any more about you two. We're sick of them. And that's fair enough.
But do you think that would damage things for you? I mean, I know there's a huge following and whatever, but it comes to a certain stage when you turn it off and say, no way, no more. Do you think it's going to damage your following?
It does damage your following. It does damage your following. And when we go to, you know, it's just because in Ireland, there, you know, let's face it, there aren't many success stories now, and we're just one of those success stories, so people tend to shine the spotlight on us. But when we go to America, we're just one of another 100 rock and roll bands. When we go to Europe, and that's the way we like to be treated. It's not the way we're treated in Ireland, but at the same time, we are proud that we're Irish, and the Irish are proud of us, and I think there is something special there. And I think, fuck the begrudges.
Okay, great. And one other thing, this is more towards Dave Fanning. Why don't you play the Baby Snakes record for us?
Well, I'll play the Baby Snakes record.
No, play it now.
Yeah, you
have it. Oh, yeah, I got it today. You're damn right, I did. I don't know where it is. It's buried underneath all these albums here. I haven't a clue where it is. Look, if I can find... hold on a second. We've very little time, Jane. So, look, what we're going to do is we're going to take an ad break, then the news, and we'll be off in about 5 minutes or so. And if I can find it in that time, I'll play it.
Okay,
thanks,
Jane. Best luck to the bomb next weekend.
Thanks a lot.
Fair point.
God bless
fair
you, Jane.
Fair point.
That's it for now. More news on 2 again at 11.
Thanks, Amelia and Donna. Fair play to you. How's the neck?
The neck is doing fine. Thank you very much. And you have lovely bodies, lads.
Oh, we've all got lovely bodies. Bono at the moment is signing Adam's bum. What does that say there? Oh, my God.
You've done it again.
You've done it again. give us your impression of Paul McGuinness, Bono. Oh, that was it there, wasn't it? Yeah?
Who else could I be?
What do we do now?
I think a sing song might be appropriate.
Oh yeah, give us another song.
And they call it puppy love, just because we're in our teens.
This is for Ashley.
Why can't I tell them this is not a puppy love?
I cry each night.
Help me, please. Hear the answer from above.
Ah!
Why can't I tell them this is not a puppy love?
Thank you, good night.
Brilliant. Okay, well, listen, all I can say is Bono, Adam, Larry and the Edge. Oh, here they are. It's Bono, Larry and the Edge. Have a wonderful time at the weekend. Have a good show. We never even talked about the support bands or anything like that.
Well, you can talk about that as I'm going up to my studio.
Oh, yeah, Jerry's going up to do a program, so we'll keep talking.
Thanks, Jerry. Take care.
Okay.
You're a lovely young fella.
Go on, you sheep. I think we mentioned the sheep once, but I think we got away with it. I can't think of anything.
They were the sport band.
Oh, yeah.
We have Lou Reed.
Will Dave take off his shorts? You haven't got that much further to go, and there's not much time left. I think you've got to go for it.
Yeah, come on, Dave, take off the shorts.
Come on, Dave. While Dave is doing that, hold on a minute, there's somebody very important outside. He said, I'm fired if I do.
No.
Charlie, piss off.
Hey, man. Hey, man. Not that important.
You don't have to be really oppressed, you know what I mean?
Mom, Dave, go for it.
But I'm not a member of a kick-ass rock and roll band, you know?
Doesn't make any difference.
Live. If you took off your knickers.
Live on RTE 2. Dave Fanning, take your trousers down. Go on, Dave. Go for it.
Okay. Here they go! Dave, you took off your beard. Let's see the rest of it.
Business. I've got a hole in my sock.
Oh, and a naked toe.
All right, well, listen, look, it's about time I think we gave it to the next program. Okay. So, Jerry, are you there, Jerry? No? Can Jerry talk to me on this one?
Yes,
now?
Yes. Have you got us there?
Go away, Jerry.
Has he really taken them off?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Then I feel...
It's not a pretty sight, Jerry.
Well, then I feel it can't get any worse, and I think it's time to say goodnight to those young men of rock and roll.
Indeed.
Okay,
Jerry.
All five of them. Good night,
Jim. Good luck.
Take care. And I've just come from Studio 2, where the rock show is, in a sense, being broadcast. And they are absolutely and utterly starkers. A new high, or indeed possibly a new low, has been reached in broadcasting. Good evening.